The other thing I want to ask about, now you left, you stepped all around this. You basically said the Dems suck. They yeah. have sucked, they will suck forever, et cetera, et cetera. And I happen to agree with that. But you said nothing about, that I got, nothing about how, what the left should do, any type of a program. Do we organize? I mean, the question that's going to be, that's out there is, do we support the Dems continue, or do we just say, screw it, we've got to let it go, we've got to go for a second party, we've got to wipe the Dems out and take a second party? I'd like your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, I really, I'm not sure I have a definite answer to that, because it's so damn difficult to get third parties started in this country. It really, you know, I wish there'd be more discussion about rules of the game questions. I guess I'm a crazy outlier in that kind of way, like Dan Lazar and some of these other constitutional writers and theories, that we need to take a hard look at how we actually structure our party system and our electoral system. I've long been an advocate of a democracy amendment. I think there's two democracy amendments that strike me as sort of useful, if nothing else, as organizing tools or discussion points. And one would be a political democracy amendment, and that would involve proportional representation, full public financing of elections, media reform, open debates. I mean, you know, the whole panoply. And there also be an economic democracy amendment too, to follow up on that, in terms of how workplaces are structured now, how businesses are structured. You know, if it's going to be just impossible to get a third party started in this country, and if in reality there were to be actual movements towards a democratic socialist movement of the Democratic Party, I mean, I said again and again, with all my left critiques of Sanders, I said if it had been Sanders versus Trump in the general election, I would have held my nose. I would have done that. So if you could actually convince me there was the left Democrat, I just don't see that happening anytime soon. It just seems that they had too many of the levers of power. In the meanwhile, I mean, one thing we absolutely know, I mean, I guess I feel like a lot of that stuff about party systems is beyond our sphere of influence. Social movements and the need to build really durable through thick and thin, and now they have to be fundamentally eco-socialist movements, you know? And to some extent, Standing Rock is a symbol and a role model of this. Social movements that can keep the heat on and that aren't just picked off on single issues, I do think that that's somewhat within leftist sphere of influence, to contribute to that and to make that happen. I mean, one of the things about that is, no matter who gets in office, right? Get Democrats in, let's say they get in, Trump screws up and it's horrible and Cory Booker gets in 2020 or something left of Cory Booker, it's not going to mean a whole hell of a lot without street heat, you know, without pipeline field heat, without without workplace heat. I think that that's in our sphere of influence, and I don't know why we don't do more to build a particular unified, non-sectarian left organization to work on and capture those sentiments. I think Mike Halbert tried with the International Organization for a Participatory Society, but for various reasons that didn't go very far. So I wish I had a better answer to that question. And if we were having a real conversation, then you'd come back and I'd come back and we'd come to a dialectical synthesis. But we want to get some other folks in. We should do that privately. Right. Well, that was a complicated question. Yes, sir.
Thanks. So a couple of things struck me. You ended talking about public ownership of money, or at least that's my shorthand, public ownership of banking, or a public economy.
Okay.
And then you were talking about leafleting and being faced with you know, people's lack of interest. And when you're talking about overcoming identity politics, you're talking about appealing to people's self-interest. I put all those together and just asked this question about public banking as a way of organizing. So a century ago in North Dakota, organizing took place around the formation of the public bank. Ellen Brown and Michael Hudson have talked about a public bank as a way of organizing. It seems to me that there's a lot of power there. It's constructive, it's positive, it appeals to things that people can immediately understand. If my money's not being invested on Wall Street, it can go to work in this community. I just want to hear what you have to say.
Well, you know, one of the things we were doing in Iowa City was trying to get tell people that U.S. Bank and Wells Fargo Bank were major investors in the Dakota Access Pipeline, and you don't need to invest in those banks. You can invest in the local community credit unions. And one of the hilarious things about that was that as I got in all these issues with my one of my publishers, who's based in Venezuela, and their latest attempt to get us paid was we had to take payment in euros. And Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank were the only banks that were set up to actually do that. So I'm supposed to have to get an account with the two ones that I've been leafleting against. Now, I mean, you might be aware that the North Dakota State Bank paid something like $4 million to help fund the National Guard and the what's that county up there, to help the militarized police up there. So suppress the pipeline fighters, yeah. And So the public banks can end up being taken over and subordinated to corporate agenda. Of course, they have a right-wing governor up there. The public bank, I imagine they're appointed by the, but yeah, no, I'm not, as much, people can move as much liquidity and social power out of private financial institutions and into public financial institutions. There's just nothing wrong with that at all. Yes, sir.
Yeah, my name is Thomas Lincoln. I want to just...
not the author of What's the Matter with Kansas?
No. Oh, okay. Actually, I went to KU with him and everything. These guys get stuff all the time.
Yeah.
But the progressive left ends up in this rhetoric again and again every election cycle, being electoral apologists for peeling off votes off the Democrats. And I really think we need to be bold and say, yes, we took those votes from them, and we're moving forward.
Yeah.
This constant, no, we didn't cause this, is really kind of wimpish. Also, two other announcements, the Dakota Access.
Yeah.
There is a new front open up, and it's in Illinois. They haven't finished it here in Illinois, and we're going after it just this weekend. And there's going to be another front.
Oh, did you say in Illinois?
You're right here in Illinois.
Oh, good for you. Yeah.
And lastly is
That's interesting.
We organized the Break Free Midwest action in May against the BP refinery here in Lake Michigan, just south of Chicago.
Sure.
And on January 13th, we are going to have a court date. 41 people who got arrested at that event are going to be in court. Several may not take the plea. So we're inviting everybody to come out to Hammond, Indiana, the Superior Courthouse, it's in downtown Hammond. It's on Friday the 13th. And as many people that can come out, give support,
It's
going to be a very fun day.
I think that issue is the issue of our times. There is a wimpishness about that. I noticed Trump, but didn't mind. And I talk about this chutzpah deficit between left and right. Trump didn't mind talking about, if I don't get what I want from the RNC, by God, I'll go off and run by myself. You know, Bernie Sanders didn't want to talk like that. You know, I don't know what that is. Thing about it is, if you got a two-party system, and you only got two damn parties, and it's a winner take nothing, all or nothing system, the only damn way you can make it pose any existential threat to the Democrats, under the system, you're not allowed to pose an existential threat to the Democrats with a third party. The only way you can pose an existential threat to them is to threaten to help elect the Republicans. But I confess to being a little wimpish about that because the Republicans just get so much more fascistic every year after another. That's the problem with that.
Thank you very much. I wanted to get your thoughts, or if you could give us your thoughts about some kind of an anti-war movement, and I'm particularly worried about Iran, but just, in general, any specifics. Not so much generalities, but about how we could get an anti-war movement.
Well, I expected Hillary to win, and I thought the first task for the left immediately was going to be a rebuild an anti-war movement because she was going to try and have a confrontation of some kind with Russia, and everybody on anti-war goes to sleep when there's a Democrat in the White House. It's just pathetic. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, Barack Obama You know, the drone campaign was the greatest terrorist program in the history of the human race, and he created more jihad. I mean, Bush had a bigger body count because of Iraq, but the scope of his madness was much more limited. I mean, Obama's all across the Middle East, South Central Asia, and all through Africa. He's militarized Africa, so. So I thought that's what our main task was going to be. Now I think our main task is the environmental issue. But yeah, we're going to have issues. Anyone who thinks they've got a peace president out there is just smoking something. It's what I call Trumpy chumpies. Don't be a Trumpy chumpy. There's all these weird linguistic things happening with, the rise of the Trump and proletariat, which is way oversold. The rise of the Trumpy chumpies, the left-wing Trumpy chumpies. Give me a break. War president. He'd be a war president in all kinds of ways. But I think we really face the issue of combining, the question of how to combine our issues. And you're going to find every military action that he's going to have is going to be intimately related to resource and petroleum issues and global petrocapitalism issues, too. It's not pour all your energy into anti-war or environmental issues or defense of black rights or defense of American rights. I think all these things are coming together in important kinds of ways. Dr. King used to talk about there all these issues that we're up against are interwoven and interrelated with each other. Look at the Standing Rock thing. It is race, ethnicity, environmental racism, and fossil fuels, and American capitalism, global capital, and the criminal justice system, and the militarized policing, it's all of them. We're really going to have a left that's all of them. And I keep harping back on the Communist Party, all kinds of issues, Stalinist, all controlled by the Soviet Union. But back in the days of when there was a left, they combined a concern with all the issues. Okay, and how they were interconnected with one another.
Those will be the concluding remarks.
Okay, all right, okay. Thank you.